Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Happy New Year. For the month of January and beyond, we will bring you a range of positive shows focusing on everything from universal childcare in New Mexico, we'll find out how they did it, to community groups working for change. If you have any ideas for shows or guests, please email us, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are kicking off the new year by talking about how to improve our overall health and well-being by adding plant-based foods to our diets. Plant-based diets are consistently shown to be the least expensive, the best for the planet, and most beneficial for short and long-term health outcomes. Last year, after I lost my dad to an aggressive form of small cell prostate cancer, we spent quite a bit of time discussing cancer and chronic disease in this country. According to the CDC, 3 in 4 people in the U.S. have at least one chronic condition, while over half have 2 or more. Chronic diseases are the leading driver of illness, disability, and death in the United States, and the problem is only growing. But it doesn't have to be this way. Research shows that 80% of these illnesses could be prevented through a healthy diet and lifestyle behaviors alone, including by adopting a plant-based or plant-predominant diet. So if you have any questions about health and adding more plant foods to your diet, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by two doctors who are leading the movement toward plant-based eating in the U.S. Dr. Neil Barnard is an adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and president and founder of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit dedicated to saving and improving human and animal lives through plant-based diets and ethical and effective scientific research. PCRM works to change the way doctors treat chronic disease, such as diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and cancer, by putting prevention over pills. The Physicians Committee also has a really interesting grant program to assist farmers who would like to grow health-promoting fruits, veggies, and nuts while phasing out animal agriculture. This was launched in November of 2024, and we will definitely do a show about that. Dr. Neil Barnard is the author of 20 books, including his latest, The Power Foods Diet. He's also editor-in-chief of the Nutrition Guide for Clinicians. That's a textbook made available to all U.S. medical students. Hi, Dr. Barnard. Happy New Year, and thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back with you.
Great to have you. Dr. Irvi Shah is a lifestyle medicine certified hematologist, oncologist, and myeloma specialist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Shah's research interests include modifiable risk factors, diet, metabolism, and microbiome in cancer. Dr. Shah completed the first pilot nutrition trial in plasma cell disorders to date and has 5 dietary trials enrolling or opening shortly. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. She leads the Nutrivention study, which recently found that a high-fiber plant-based dietary intervention may delay progression from multiple myeloma, a type of rare incurable blood cancer affecting the bone marrow. You can read about this study at kalw.org, click news, and your call. Hi, Dr. Shah. Happy New Year to you, and thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you so much, Rose. Excited to chat with you today.
Well, it's great to have you back. It's great to have both of you. Dr. Shah, let's start off with you. There is so much new research out about the benefits of a plant-based diet and a lot of misinformation on social media. So as we look to 2026, what are your hopes for this year and really trying to get this information out to your patients and beyond?
I think that's a great point, Rose, and it's really unfortunate that a lot of the great research gets diluted in this misinformation. But I think what we're trying to do as physicians and doctors is trying to bring the true science out to the people, and hopefully people can focus on and be able to differentiate the noise from the actual research.
Dr. Barnard, what would you like to add? What are your hopes for the year?
Well, I'm hoping that we can in some ways simplify our lives. People right now, they look at the scale and they think, oh, over the holidays, I gained too much weight. So what do I have to do? I have to go to the doctor and get a Wegovy prescription. I've got to join the gym and sweat for 3 hours a week and da 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 da. Wait, stop, stop. Let's just look at the fuel we're putting in the tank. And if it's plant-based foods, it's remarkable how we can lose weight easily and our numbers get better, our cholesterols come down, our blood pressure comes down, we're feeling better, we get off our medicines, and we just have to put it to work. Focus on the short term, give it a shot, see what it'll do for you, and it can simplify your life.
Dr. Barnard, I think this is such a great point you're making because I love going on social media and learning about health and perimenopause and menopause. There's so much more information out about menopause, which is great. And there's a lot of information about what women need, especially after 40s when it comes to strength training. But it is pretty overwhelming. And when you think about going back to the basics, you can take all of that noise. Because when you're talking about plant foods, I mean, you're talking about basic foods, veggies, fruits, beans, nuts, seeds, and you don't have to make it that complicated. Can you talk more about that? Because I think that's a really important message.
We're doing a very large study right now with Blue Cross Blue Shield, where we have people who've got type 2 diabetes and other issues that they're dealing with. And just as you said, over the years, they've been dealing with prescriptions and frankly, diets that are a lot of work, like counting your carb grams and your calories and these things. And what we said is, wait, stop. What we have learned is that diabetes comes from the buildup of fat inside certain cells of the body so they don't respond to your natural insulin. Let's just get those bad foods out. And we can lose weight in the same process, not by restricting calories, but by focusing on the types of foods. And the changes were really pretty simple. For a person, they get up in the morning and their breakfast isn't some gourmet thing. It's they pour cereal in a bowl. Well, if it's almond milk or soy milk or rice milk on top, well, that's plant-based. Or if it's a bowl of oatmeal with some raisins and cinnamon and so forth on top, that's plant-based too. And I can make you a French toast that your whole family will be thrilled with on Sunday morning. And that's plant-based. And there are even plant-based sausages you can buy at the store. You just try all these things out. And so the people in this study are trying those things out and they're discovering it's easy. They're losing weight and they're finding that their diabetes is getting better. In some cases, their need for medication gets better. And you mentioned menopause. Hopefully, we can maybe tackle that in this program as well. We recently did three publications in the journal Menopause on how we can make hot flashes go away for a great many women, not with hormone prescriptions, but with diet changes. So anyway, all of those things can be put to work, and the side effects are all good ones. Your numbers are better.
I love the study about how soy milk can actually reduce hot flashes by about 50%.
Yes, and what we did is we brought in 84 people. They were all women who were having hot flashes, all postmenopausal hot flashes. And we did three things in this case. We said, let's get the animal products out. I mean, they became vegan, but it was easy. It was the types of changes I just mentioned. You know, instead of meat sauce on your spaghetti, it's tomato sauce. It's not hard.
Oh, did we just lose Dr. Barnard?
So
Oh.
first thing was it was the animal. Yes.
Okay, go ahead. We just lost you for a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
That's okay.
They followed a vegan diet. They kept oils low, but we added soybeans to their diet. And as you know, soybeans reduce cancer risk. But not everybody knows that, but they're good to add. And what we found with that three-point combination, the moderate to severe hot flashes dropped by 88%. So that's as good as hormone replacement therapy with no risk.
Wow.
They also, the average person lost 7 or 8 pounds in 12 weeks. They felt better than they felt in years by changing the types of foods we eat. So our job as doctors is to make it approachable and simple so that people can put it to work and realize it doesn't have to be struggle. But now people are skeptical about any diet change. So what we do is we work with people and give them some support and ask them to try it for themselves for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is, and they'll see the results.
And we'll put a number of resources on our website. But if you hear Doctors Barnard and Shaw talk about some of these studies. Just for example, I just put in soybeans reduce cancer risk. Here's one from Johns Hopkins last year. Soy isoflavones were associated with a 26% reduced risk of breast cancer. Here's one from the American Institute for Cancer Research. Studies show soy may reduce the risk of developing breast cancer. So there's so many good resources out there that are reputable and they're very easy to find. Dr. Shaw, let's talk about some of the research that you are doing. And before we do that, we had you on a couple of years ago to talk about your cancer journey. And you talked about how doctors really didn't ask you what you were eating. And even though you were studying to become a doctor, you weren't really sure what to eat. That luckily is starting to change, but can you take us back to that time and talk about what that experience was like for you and how that's really shifted how you practice medicine today?
Rose, that's a really important experience for me in my life. Where in 2016, I was at the end of my first year of my hematology oncology training. And at that time, I got diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Throughout my training, while we studied very little nutrition, I never thought about it as something that I should be even talking to patients about related to any of their diseases. But when I was diagnosed, what I found was friends and family would suggest foods to eat and avoid. And I realized I didn't have enough training to even know what would be best for me or what's the data or latest research around that. So it became a side hobby or interest for me to start reading about these things, but I didn't really know how I could make this my career at that time while I was in training because there aren't too many doctors really focusing on this. But when I joined fa as faculty at Memorial Sloan Kettering, I decided to open the Nutrivention study, which was the first pilot study in a pre-cancer population. So they have a high risk to develop a blood cancer. And then we looked to see if we could help these patients without calorie restriction, just to change their diet to a high fiber plant-based diet and see if we could improve key cancer risk markers and also potentially delay progression to the blood cancer. And the results were really promising, and we just published them in Cancer Discovery this past year. I can go into some of those details if you would like.
Yes, that would be great, please.
So these were patients with an elevated BMI or body mass index, and we provided them with a lunch and dinner, 12 meals per week, frozen meals that were high fiber plant-based for 12 weeks and followed them for 1 year on the study. We saw a significant improvement in weight, 7% reduction. We saw an improvement in quality of life. Patients actually felt better. We saw an improvement in their microbiome health. So we saw an improvement in what we call gut microbiome diversity. Higher diversity is associated with better cancer outcomes like survival in many studies, and we were actually able to show that we could change this. We also showed that there was an improvement in insulin resistance, which is also associated with cancer risk. And what was interesting was that one patient who had been on insulin for 30 years was able to stop this within a month on going on the study. And what's most interesting was he was on a GLP-1 drug for the diabetes, but his cancer markers were continuing to rise, even though he had lost some weight because his diet had not changed and he was still on insulin. And after going on the study, once he was able to stop the insulin, he lost some additional weight and his diet quality improved to a high fiber plant-based diet. And we saw stabilization of his cancer risk markers, suggesting we could potentially delay progression to the cancer.
That is really incredible, Dr. Shaw. You also, in this study, focused on a high fiber plant-based diet. And I was really happy to see that the Washington Post had a piece yesterday called "You're Probably Not Eating Enough Fiber. Here's What to Do About It." So it's great that national media are focusing on these issues. Can you talk about fiber, Dr. Shaw, why you think most people in the US are not getting enough? And what is the best way to increase fiber intake?
Thanks, Rose. That's a really, really important point that I think if there's one take-home message is that Fiber is really important. And from all the research we're doing, I joke, but I think it's true that fiber is the original immunotherapy that we just didn't realize. And we've seen significant changes in inflammation and the immune system in our studies and the way the cells interact with each other just with changing diet. Less than 5% of the US population get enough dietary fiber, and the average intake is about 10 to 12 grams, but we would like to get to double that, 25 to 30 grams at the minimum, based on the recommended daily allowance. So, one way to really double fiber intake that could be a quick change would be to add a cup of beans or lentils to your diet every day. If you are a person who is at the average of 10 grams, one cup of beans or lentils will have approximately 15 grams of fiber. So that brings you closer to the goal just with that one small change.
Dr. Barnard, what would you like to add about fiber?
Yeah, if a person isn't eating enough fiber, that means they're really not eating the right foods because fiber is intrinsic to every piece of fruit you ever put in on your plate, whether it's an apple or an orange or some grapes, and it's in beans and vegetables and whole grains and so forth. So if our fiber content is low, that means we're not only missing the fiber, which is going to help keep us slim and so forth, but we're missing all the other nutrients that were in the plant too. All the vitamins that are in there, the isoflavones and so forth that are going to protect the brain and help us. So if we build our diet from really four groups to focus on, the fruits, that can be berries like strawberries and blueberries, but it can be things like apples and oranges. Let's put them on our shopping list and make sure they're there. Vegetables is the second group, and then the beans are fiber champions, and all the things that a bean can turn into, whether it's black bean soup or soy beans turning into tofu, they all have fiber. And finally, the whole grains. If they're front and center, we're going to get plenty of fiber plus all the other nutrients that the plants want to bring us.
I'm just looking at a high fiber chart here. So one artichoke is 7 grams of fiber, a cup of Brussels sprouts, 6 grams, a cup of broccoli, 5 grams, a cup of raspberries is 8. Raspberries are really high. A pear is about 5.5 grams. And Dr. Barnard, listening to Dr. Shaw talk about her Nutrivention study and the changes, incredible changes that she saw. Can you also talk about some of the studies that you've been conducting? Because I love hearing doctors talk about some of these studies when people add more fruits and veggies and whole grains and beans to their diet, because the changes are really incredible.
Back in 2003, NIH gave us a grant to try to find a new approach to type 2 diabetes. And the idea was at that time, people were with diabetes would try to restrict carbohydrates and eat tiny amounts of them and eat less food to lose weight. And what we had discovered was that diabetes seemed to be driven by the fat content of the diet. High fat made insulin not work. So the diet that we tested didn't have any animal products in it at all, but it had the groups I just mentioned, all kinds of high fiber plant-based foods. And people needed a little hand-holding to get started, but pretty soon they got used to it. But there was something that happened. What we discovered is that even though people weren't restricting calories at all, the excess weight started to melt away. And people were losing weight and losing weight. And what we've seen with this kind of diet is people lose about a pound per week without trying, without exercise, without limiting portions. It just melts away. And then the second thing is we discovered is that people's outside doctors would say, wait, your blood sugar is falling. You don't need this diabetes drug anymore. And so they would start tapering back their medicines. And in that study, which is now 20 years ago, I saw something that I had never seen as a medical student at the George Washington University, where I'd got my medical degree and where I'm on faculty today. I saw a man who had had diabetes for 4 years, and he had a terrible family history. And he said, if I don't get this in under control, I'm going to lose my vision, like my aunt did, or I might have an amputation like my grandpa. He said, I don't want that. He changed his diet. His A1C was 9.5 to start. And so people listening to this with diabetes know that's not good. That's too high. As the study went on, he lost 60 pounds and his A1C fell to 5.3, which is totally normal. In other words, all signs of diabetes had disappeared. Now, at that time, to say that diabetes was a two-way street was hugely a conflicted kind of statement. It was very controversial. But since that time, we see it all the time, where a person has had diabetes for 10 years, 20 years, and then they change their diet and the diabetes disappears for all intents and purposes. Now, this doesn't happen to everybody. You may only go so far, but it is now a possibility to improve this dramatically. And the same is true with high cholesterol and hypertension. And now our battleground is not just diabetes, but also Alzheimer's disease, where we want to see what we can do to use diet and lifestyle to push that away. And in the early stages, maybe even turn that around. I'm speaking of the brilliant work by Dr. Dean Ornish and other researchers who have been tackling this disease, finding that diet and lifestyle is extremely powerful and extremely promising.
Before we go to break, can you both talk a bit about how these issues should be discussed at a time when chronic diseases are unfortunately on the rise? And then Johns Hopkins has an article about ultra-processed foods and found that 75% of the US food supply is ultra-processed. More than half of the calories that the average US adult consumes comes from ultra-processed foods. And when we did a lot of these shows about cancer and health last year, after I lost my dad to an aggressive form of small cell prostate cancer, I always talked about how it's not about shaming or making people feel bad because, I mean, my dad and I talked about this and he said, yes, please share my story. He struggled with weight for decades. He was addicted to a lot of junk food and could never get a handle on it. It was so difficult. And so it's not about making anyone feel bad, but I think it's so important to just let people know that it's never too late to make changes because the body is very forgiving. And making these small changes can make a huge difference. So, Dr. Shaw, how should we be talking about this? So it doesn't sound like we're, making people feel bad about choices because it's hard. A lot of this food is so addicting. And my dad was a woodworker. Anytime he would go into a store to buy his supplies, he was surrounded by cookies and candies. So that's just how things are set up in this country.
Yes, Rose, that's so true and so difficult for just the all people or patients around the country and world now because we're living in a system that pushes us towards these unhealthy and processed foods, and it requires us to make the choices that are healthy for ourselves. So as doctors and physicians, I think we have a responsibility to be sharing this data with patients or at least guiding them and pushing them towards what is healthy choices. And research after research, as Dr. Barnard also just shared, it shows that eating more fiber-rich plant foods is associated with better outcomes, whether it's cardiovascular disease, renal disease, cancer, arthritis, and many other disorders, even high cholesterol or diabetes. And so I think once doctors start believing this and understand it's important and share it with patients at every clinic visit, as well as the education, a lot that Dr. Barnard's PCRM is also doing, and we do with our education through patient foundations and things like that, I think that helps spread the word. So just as an example, I have found that this one small pilot study that we have done, even though it was a 20-patient study, it has led to significant change in the myeloma and precancer community of patients across the world where they've heard about this, seen the benefits, and really started making changes on their own.
And Dr. Barnard, what would you like to add?
Two quick things. You mentioned ultra-processed foods. I'm so glad that you did because it's a big point of confusion. Researchers have looked at this question, are processed foods bad for us? And what they found is that some are bad and some are actually good for us. I'm speaking about Harvard researchers, for example, who looked at the foods associated with diabetes or cardiovascular disease. And they found that if you have, say, breakfast cereal, even a cereal that has sugar or colors added, It doesn't cause diabetes. It might even reduce the risk of diabetes if it replaces your bacon and eggs. If you have instant oatmeal, that's not going to cause you a problem, even though it's processed. And some of these, the reason I'm cheerleading for some of these processed foods is they also often have added folic acid, which prevents birth defects, or added B12, which can prevent certain kinds of anemia. So we don't want to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. If a person has breakfast cereal or bread or white spaghetti, that's not poison, and we shouldn't beat ourselves up about it. The processed foods that really are as bad as advertised is sausage and hot dogs and bologna and Dr. Pepper, despite its medical degree. These sugar sweetened beverages and things, that's not health food, and you can throw that out. As far as how we make changes, let me suggest an approach that we have been using recently, which this is going to sound like a surprise. What we do is, if a person has a health issue, like they have extra weight they want to lose, what we'll do is we focus on the short term and make a big change. It's like we're going to the swimming pool, and we're not going to just stick in our toe and gradually get into the water. We're going to hold each other's hands and jump in together. What I mean by that is, we have the participant and their family be on the healthiest diet they can, and we get together every week and we make sure everyone's doing well. And what we discover is that it's much easier than kind of torturing yourself with a small diet change here or there that doesn't really have a big reward. So if somebody's got 60 pounds they want to lose, they want to get rid of diabetes, we say, okay, for the next, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I'm going to do a totally vegan diet. I'm going to get the recipes. We're going to really do this. The family says, we're in. And they do it. And we meet every week. And what they discover is that the pounds come off, their blood sugar comes down, they feel so much better. And then they decide, do I want to stick with it for another week or not? And we find that that's, if they get a reward, if their health is really demonstrably better, they want to stick with it. So that's the approach we now use, both for diet changes and for smoking. We don't have people cut down. We have them quit. And pretty soon they think, holy cow, you changed my life faster than I thought was possible.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a quick break. On today's Your Call, we're kicking off the new year by talking about how to improve our overall health and well-being by embracing a plant-based or plant-predominant diet. We're joined by Dr. Neil Barnard, adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine, president and founder of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, author of many books, including his latest, The Power Foods Diet. It's all about using foods for healthful weight control. Dr. Irvi Shah is a lifestyle medicine certified hematologist, oncologist, and myeloma specialist at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have a lot of emails, and we'll get to those right after a break. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will continue our authoritarian playbook series by speaking with artists about how they are fighting the Trump administration's policies and attacks against artists. And again, we are going to be doing a lot more positive shows this month. So if you have any show ideas or guest ideas, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about how to improve our overall health and well-being by adding more plant-based foods to your diet, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255 or email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Dr. Neil Barnard, adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine, president and founder of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They work to save and improve human and animal lives through plant-based diets. Dr. Barnard is the author of many books, including his latest, The Power Foods Diet. Dr. Irvi Shah is a lifestyle medicine certified hematologist, oncologist, and myeloma specialist at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer, and she leads the Nutrivention study, and it recently found that a high-fiber plant-based dietary intervention may delay progression for a rare type of incurable blood cancer affecting the bone marrow. And you can find more about their work at klw.org, click news, and your call. We've got a number of emails. So here's one from Trish in Richmond. I'm thinking about cutting out or cutting back on meat. I can't figure out how to get enough high quality protein without getting too many carbs. I need to watch my blood sugar and not have too many carbs. Dr. Shah, do you want to take that first? What about high protein sources that are low carb?
So, one thing when people talk about carbs is we should realize that carbs are all not the same, and there are complex carbohydrates and refined carbohydrates. We all agree and want to avoid refined carbohydrates in any diet. Complex carbohydrates are actually associated with health benefits and actually can be beneficial even with diabetes. And these would be ones that are fiber rich, such as whole grains, beans, seeds, nuts, fruits, and vegetables. I think in terms of protein rich sources for plant foods, could be things like beans, legumes. There are so many varieties of beans. So you have chickpeas, black beans, pinto beans. Then you can have edamame. And then also soy can be both as tofu and tempeh. And those are extremely great sources of protein as well. Nuts and seeds are also good sources. So I think these could be some starting places that one could think about.
Thank you. Dr. Barnard, what would you like to add?
Yes, I think Dr. Shah really hit the nail on the head. I would like to reinforce one thing that she said is that we're not really worried about total carbohydrate intake the way we used to be in the 1950s. Because when we're looking at blood sugar control, what really matters is whether the cells of the body can take that sugar out of the blood, wherever that sugar comes from, any kind of carbohydrate. And so if a person is on a diet that is based on plant foods, it helps get the fat junk out of their muscle cells and liver cells. That gives space for the sugar to come in, and you don't really have to worry about carbohydrates so much. So the new approach is to help our body to work with sugar more effectively. Sugar is a natural fuel, as every marathon runner knows. So your body should be able to handle it. And on a low fat plant-based diet, your body can handle it much, much better. And the carbohydrate doesn't end up being a problem.
And a few of my favorites is a fava bean tofu has a lot of protein. It's pretty amazing. There's a company called Big Mountain that makes this. And then another one I recently found is from Purist Pantry, and it's organic pea protein. So there's these little crisps that if you just want a little bit more protein, it's really high in protein. You can just add that to anything and you can taste it, or even you don't really have to taste it depending on how you use it. So I hope that helps you, Trish. And thank you so much for the email. Oh, and then tempeh is another good one. Rob writes, I'm striving to go vegan and I'm looking for collagen sources for seniors with tendonitis symptoms. Dr. Barnard, any tips?
Well, you can go to the store, go online, and you'll find all kinds of people who want to sell you collagen. And as soon as you swallow it, your digestive process rips it all up and it's all gone because the amino acids that make it up all dissociate. So you don't need to go that route. But if you eat a normal, healthful diet that has the elements in it that we mentioned, beans, grains, fruits and vegetables, they have all of the amino acids that your body will need. And if they're from plants, they'll bring one more thing, and that's vitamin C. And vitamin C is a ubiquitous vitamin that your body uses to build collagen on its own. So bottom line, plant-based diet, lots of healthy foods. You don't need collagen supplements or a special collagen-containing food, but you do need a good plant-rich diet with vitamin C in it.
Well, thank you for that. And collagen is everywhere. And again, you know, no offense at all, Rob, but I want to just put this out there because I think it's so important to think about where these powders come from. And like Dr. Barnard said, do we really need them? And a couple years ago, There was a really important investigation out about how collagen powder has been linked to violence against indigenous peoples in Brazilian forests. And Dr. Barnard, I think it's so important to bring this up because there's all these crazes, and in some cases, people might benefit from them. We could look at the science, but we should also look at how this is affecting people in other parts of the world and how it's affecting the planet.
There's no two ways about that. If you look at what's happening in Brazil for right now, and has been happening for a long, long period of time, the rainforest is being cut away. People talk about the rainforest as being the lungs of the planet, that it helps to keep our air clean and our environment healthy. And as we're destroying the rainforest, it's a terrible thing. And what's it being destroyed for? It's being destroyed to raise feed grains for cattle. You think, good heavens, Americans alone eat 1 million animals every hour. Not just cows and pigs, but chickens seem to be our latest thing that we just can't get enough of. And yet, people who don't eat any of those things are not only better environmentalists, but they also are healthier and live longer. But if you're like me and you grew up in Fargo, North Dakota, and you come from a long line of cattle ranchers, you do have to learn a couple of new things as you change your diet. But it turns out to be pretty easy. And I want to tip my hat to our friends at Harvard, who came out with a really cool study 10 years ago, where they said there are certain foods that you should be eating a lot more of instead of just worrying about what you eat less of, because they found six or more groups of foods that the more you ate, the more weight you lost. Top of the list was berries, like blueberries and strawberries. Number two was cruciferous vegetables, like broccoli and Brussels sprouts. The third was green vegetables, like spinach. The fourth was melons, like cantaloupe or watermelon. Number five was citrus fruits. And number six was the legume group, which includes beans and soy. So they said, stop worrying so much about what you're going to not eat. Bring these into your diet, and you end up losing weight and improving your health.
Well, thank you for that. Wendy writes, more households are single households, yet most groceries carry packaged vegetables, which gets very expensive and wasteful. Most of my produce goes bad and has to be trashed. Dr. Shaw, do you have any tips for Wendy?
Yes, very much so. I think one issue is that many times when we think about plant-based diets, we assume we need to just eat fresh fruits and vegetables, and that's the only place we'll get the nutrients. But frozen fruits and vegetables have similar, if not more, of the vitamins and minerals because as soon as they're picked, they're frozen. So you don't need to always have fresh fruits and vegetables in your refrigerator if you don't, didn't have access to it or you were traveling. But if you can stock up your freezer with fruits and vegetables in bags, even that can be a good source that if you don't have something fresh, you can just pull that out of the freezer, heat it up, and you have something ready and tasty to go quickly.
I love this one, Dr. Shaw. And I've noticed that at Costco, I mean, the prices are really incredible. When you look at organic broccoli, they have cauliflower rice, they have blueberries, mangoes,
Yes.
cherries, because things are pretty expensive right now in the stores. But the price for the organic frozen veggies and
It's
fruits
cheaper.
is cheaper, yeah, especially at Costco. And that brings us to another question about organic versus conventional. Kevin says, do you agree with the Environmental Working Group's Dirty Dozen and Clean 15 lists? If organic red grapes or strawberries and pears are not available, is it better not to eat them or is conventional okay? What are your thoughts, Dr. Barnard?
The Environmental Working Group is a good group, and their list is reliable. What they look at is certain foods are more fragile on the farm, in the fields, and so they tend to get sprayed with more pesticides to repel insects. And so if you can get organic for certain foods like berries, you're ahead of the game. But if you're in a place where there just isn't any organic, then eat the conventional one. It's better than not eating it, and it beats the heck out of spam any day. So you do want to have those things. Organic is better, conventional is still okay. We did a study on food costs, though, where we looked at the food cost of going to a plant-based diet. And you do spend more on vegetables, and you spend more on fruits, and maybe some more on beans, but you spend less or nothing on meat and cheese. And so the average person spends about 15 or 16 or a little bit more than that percent less every month on all their food costs combined compared to what they were eating before. In other words, a healthy diet is an inexpensive diet.
Well, thank you for those messages. We'll read a couple more emails. Today on your call, we are talking about how to improve your overall health and well-being by adding plant-based foods to your diet. Dr. Neil Barnard is adjunct professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine, president and founder of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. His latest book is The Power Foods Diet. Dr. Irvi Shah is a lifestyle medicine certified hematologist, oncologist, and myeloma specialist at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Shah is a cancer survivor who focuses on dietary interventions and dietary guidelines for cancer. Let's hear from a caller who's been waiting patiently. Let's go to Karen in Oakland. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the show. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, no, thanks for having the show. Hey, listen, so I am a qualified health coach. I mean, I try to help people, eat better and have better exercise. So I have one concern, which I called about, but actually, then you started talking about amino acids. So the first one is my concern, and I haven't done the research yet, on the estrogen levels in soybeans. And then the second one, which I did do the research on, is the limited amount of essentials you can get from plants. So I do encourage people to put a little bit of tiny fish in their salad to get a little of some of those essentials that you just can't get enough from the peas. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you brought this up because in one of the shows we did last year, Stanford did a really great study looking at a junk food plant-based diet and a healthy plant-based diet. So, as Dr. Barnard said, there's differences in ultra-processed foods. Well, there's also differences when we're talking about a vegan or a plant-based diet because there's
Right.
so much more junk food out there now, Dr. Barnard. And so, what about that question that you can't get all the essentials you need just by eating a plant-based diet? Of course, you have to know, well, what are you eating? If you're just
Yeah.
eating like Beyond Burgers every day, that's probably not healthy, but what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, terrific question. The simple rules for a plant-based diet are there are four groups that you should include in your daily routine. Fruits and vegetables are two. Beans and whole grains are the other two. If they're in your diet, you're going to get the protein and minerals that you need and so forth. But you should add vitamin B12, which you need for healthy nerves and healthy blood. Everybody, and frankly, even if you're not vegan, you should be taking B12 because a lot of people are low. That's pretty much it. You'll need vitamin D, but that really comes from the sun. And no matter what your diet is like, you'll probably need a supplement if you're in a cold climate. But regarding essential amino acids, they are all found in plants. And let me say this really clearly. Christopher Gardner at Stanford stood up at a microphone at our conference. Dr. Shaw, you might have been there. And he said, all plants have all the essential amino acids. And people were shocked. They thought it was only quinoa that has all the essential amino acids. But he's right. Researchers have completely discarded the old idea that certain plants are missing one amino acid or another. They have them all. But a varied diet brings you the right balance, and that'll take care of it. And the last thing is, you're right that soybeans do have compounds in them called isoflavones. And they attach to estrogen receptors. And that freaked researchers out. They thought, good heavens, they might cause cancer. But the research showed just the opposite, that the more soy a woman consumes, the lower her risk of breast cancer. And if a woman has had breast cancer, if she eats more soy, whether it's tofu or soy milk or whole soybeans or tempeh or whatever, her survival is improved as well. And here's what's going on. Your body's estradiol, that is your natural estrogen that is in fact linked with cancer if you have too much of it, that attaches to a certain receptor called estrogen receptor alpha. The isoflavones in soybeans attach preferentially to estrogen receptor beta, which is like the brake on cancer. So soybeans do not cause cancer. They reduce the risk. And this kind of fear about soy has unfortunately driven soy milk off the shelves. We should bring it back because if your son or daughter drinks soy milk instead of cow's milk, their risk of prostate cancer, the risk of breast cancer is going to be lower.
Or promoting just the edamame itself.
Edamame is
Right.
great.
Yeah.
Edamame is the baby soybean. It's if you left it in the pod a little longer and had mature soybeans, its isoflavone content goes up, which is why for menopausal women who are having hot flashes that are really driving them crazy, we do vegan low fat and a half a cup of soybeans every single day. And that's the study that caused an 88% drop in their moderate to severe hot flashes. So edamame is
Okay,
good.
I have
The mature
one more
ones are better.
question before we go. I
Sure.
don't want to take up too much time, but I am concerned about the lack of actual flesh in the diet. You get omega-3 from the skin of the fish. People are eating way too much, prey fish, so there's a lot of mercury in that. So for the people who resort to fish for protein. So, I'm trying to come up with some really good, conversations about this that make sense in science.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great question. Dr. Barnard, your thoughts on fish and omega-3s?
Fish are the only carnivores that people eat. In other words, that fish has been in the ocean eating somebody else. And as the caller mentioned, that's the reason they accumulate mercury and heavy metals because they go up the food chain. There's no requirement for fish at all. You're right about omega-3s, but omega-3s, there is an omega-3 in plants called ALA or alpha-linolenic acid. If you consume it in abundant quantities in plants, your body makes the other omega-3s out of it that your brain needs. And it's been controversial as to how well does your body transform them. And the answer is better than you'd think. It's just a question of whether we include them in our diet. So that means green vegetables and then also seeds like flax and others that people will consume if they wish to. But you don't need fish and you're better off without it. And certainly the fish and the environment are better if we stop, because as you know, fishing is probably the most environmentally destructive industry that we have, unfortunately, as you've been if you've been reading the papers lately.
Dr. Shah, do you have anything to add about fish?
I think these were really great points. The only thing I might say is microplastics is another issue with fish consumption, given that there's plastic contamination in the oceans quite significantly. And then when we think about wild caught versus farmed fish, the wild caught are more likely to have the omega-3 because they're eating the algae, and the main source of the omega-3 is from the algae. So if we can just get our omega-3 from the seaweed or the algae, or like the other sources Dr. Barnard mentioned, I don't think we need to get it from the middleman, which would be the fish. And farmed fish often have lower levels of omega-3s anyways.
And Dr. Shah, we're getting a few more questions about organic versus conventional. Do you have any thoughts on that? If organic is not available or too expensive, do you think conventional is fine?
Yes, so actually there's a really nice study that was done over a decade ago looking at this and said, should we only consume organic fruits and vegetables? And what that study showed is that about 20,000 cancer cases per year could be prevented if even 50% of the US population increased their fruit and vegetable intake by just one serving per day. And from the same thing, one serving increase in fruit and vegetables by 50% of the population, a maximum of 10 cancer cases per year would be attributed to pesticides present on these fruits and vegetables. So the number of cases that we could actually reduce from just increasing our fruit and vegetable consumption far outnumbers the number of cases we could say might be associated with pesticide exposure. So what I tell patients is, yes, you might, if you have the means or you find organic and you want to do that, that's okay. But if you cannot, it's much more important to eat the fruits and vegetables than not eat them because you're worried about them being not organic.
In our closing minutes, what are you looking forward to this year? I saw a great segment on the PBS NewsHour a couple of days ago about how medical students are now taking cooking classes, and they're mostly working with plants. And they're young medical students, and they're learning about why it is important to talk about diet with their patients, which is just so refreshing. At a time when this information really needs to get out there. So, Dr. Barnard, what really is keeping you hopeful this year, and what are you looking forward to this year?
Two big trends. The first is going beyond prevention. whether it's heart disease or Alzheimer's or cancer cases, and looking more at reversal. So that can that case of heart disease be reversed? Well, yes, this is Dr. Ornish's work and others. Can that diabetes be reversed? Let's put that to work. And then the second thing is one that you hinted at, finding a way to think going from medicine to maybe culinary medicine. So the doctor refers the patient to somebody who can help them learn how to cook or how to make convenient foods so that we're empowering the patient and working collaboratively.
I love that, Dr. Barnard, and you reminded me of the amazing documentary on CNN called The Last Alzheimer's Patient, and it's all about the work that Dr. Dean Ornish did, and oh my gosh, I mean, he interviewed people who were in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, people who forgot really how to do spreadsheets, or one man was a voracious reader, and he really had a hard time getting through one page of a book. And then after he went through Dr. Ornish's program, which luckily is now covered by Medicare and a few other major insurance companies, oh my gosh, they went back to reading books and doing spreadsheets. I mean, it was amazing. So I hope you can take the time to watch this documentary, The Last Alzheimer's Patient. You can find it online. And brief final thoughts from you, Dr. Shaw. What are you looking forward to this year?
To add to Dr. Barnard's point about disease reversal, we did some of these studies in the prevention setting, and we're really excited to share that we've opened a newly diagnosed cancer study within multiple myeloma to understand how diet affects response to chemotherapy. And we do know that there are studies in other cancers where high fiber diets are and healthier microbiomes are associated with better response to chemotherapy, better survival. So it's not just about reversing or preventing disease, but even once somebody is diagnosed, this can significantly improve outcomes. Mm-hmm. And what we found with our studies is, and what's been surprising even to me, is that patients actually really love it. They don't feel it's restrictive, and they actually feel that they're focusing on something positive. It empowers them. And many of them are doing this long-term well beyond the study is over, to just going to show how they feel so much better and helps them sustain it long-term.
Wow, really incredible information. Dr. Irvi Shah and Dr. Neil Barnard, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.